Text messaging while running a red light on a train. That's the story we're hearing out of Los Angeles. I think it's kind that a train engineer would take an interest in teen train enthusiasts, otherwise known as rail fans, but man, that just doesn't look good. So no text messaging while I'm driving this show, that I'll promise you. Mostly because I don't know how, but I mean, I've done it a few times, but I'm always responding to somebody else's text. I don't think I've initiated a text message yet. We do have a great show coming up, though. The always provocative Sir Charles Schulz. We'll talk with Sir Charles about solar thermal generators, the latest in what could be a planet-saving device, one that could, from community to community, could have made a difference, say, going on right now down in Texas. What if we could establish a whole new source of power, disconnect ourselves entirely from the traditional ways that Americans get through the winter, or for that matter, through the summer? Solar thermal power generators, closer than you think. We'll talk about it coming up in just a few minutes. First, open lines for the rest of this hour. And before we get to that, we have some interesting crypto news. An incredibly credible UFO witness, JFK assassination warmed over in the North Pole, much warmer than it should be. The latest dispatch from the top of the world coming up from Cap and Kelly when we do crypto news next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Crypto news right away, because I noticed the phones are ringing for open lines, and we'll find out where you're going to take us on this Sunday night, coming up in just a minute. But first, an article out of the Sun UK, fascinating. You can find the link for it at coasttocoastam.com. An RAF expert yesterday revealed how he tracked a whole fleet of spaceships on military radar, but the Ministry of Defense told him to keep quiet. His name is Alan Turner. He's 64 years old. He was a wing commander. He said colleagues sat stunned when 35 super-fast vessels appeared on their screens. Wing Commander Turner, who was then a chief operator for the RAF's radar system for 29 years, said the craft were equally spaced and shot from 3,000 feet to 60,000 feet at about 300 miles per hour. Incredibly, every few seconds, one of the UFOs would suddenly vanish from the radar and be replaced by an identical vessel moments later. Wing Commander Turner said six military radars plus operators at Heathrow spotted the UFOs east of Salisbury Plain and filed reports on the unexplained phenomenon in 1971. The RAF chief then drew a map charting their flight in between key sites. And 3 days later, the Ministry of Defense visited the RAF and instructed staff to, quote, never speak of the incident again. Wing Commander Turner, who retired from the RAF in 1995, said UFOs are a fact. I tracked them on military radar units. What I saw defied all logic and was, quite frankly, extraordinary. See more on that at coasttocoastam.com. Perhaps we'll see Commander Turner in the upcoming ABC special on UFOs. The ABC News press release runs like this. For decades, millions of people around the world have reported seeing UFOs hovering in their skies. It is a mystery that science has been unable to solve, and the phenomenon remains largely unexamined. Much of the reporting on this subject holds those who claim to have seen UFOs up to ridicule. UFOs, seeing is believing, takes a serious look at the phenomenon in today's world. Building on the original Peter Jennings report from 2005, David Muir reports on new sightings as well as NASA's current search for life on Mars. UFOs, seeing is believing, airs on a special edition of Primetime Tuesday, September 16th from 9:30 until 11 Eastern Time. David Muir interviews some of the most credible witnesses of the sighting, and a radar expert who evaluated their claims and found something surprising in the data. That's all they're saying. Sophisticated animations approved by the eyewitnesses allow viewers to get a feel for the experience firsthand. Looks like the investigation into the JFK assassination isn't over yet either. Michael Young of the Dallas Morning News reports, 45 years after President John F. Kennedy was killed, the details surrounding his death remain topics of endless debate. Cliff Spiegelman will testify to that. He's the professor of statistics at Texas A&M University. He organized a six-member team that compared the composition of bullet fragments from the JFK shooting with other bullets from the same manufacturer. The group found that those fragments weren't nearly as rare as the government's expert witness concluded in 1976. That's when Dr. Vincent Gwynn determined that all five fragments came from two bullets fired by Lee Harvey Oswald. A third shot missed. The claim was made that those five fragments could only have come from two bullets, Dr. Spiegelman said. Our research showed it could have been two or more. If it is more than two, there is an increased likelihood that someone else provided one of them. The debate continues, perhaps never to be settled. Kind of like how the fans of Beta Tape will never give up arguing how it should never have lost to VHS, or how HD DVD should never have lost to Blu-ray. Although Blu-ray itself might be doomed, Blu-ray will be dead by 2012, Tech Radar reports. Planning on buying a Blu-ray player? Hold on. It's already battling public indifference, technical problems, laughable features, and downloadable movies. Is it any wonder Blu-ray is doomed to fail? Tech Radar reports five reasons why Blu-ray is headed for the grave. I'll put that link up on my blog here in a few minutes, and you guys can take a look at that if you're thinking about investing in a new Blu-ray. Perhaps when the Mayans ended their calendar on 2012, they were really thinking about just Blu-ray. They had a great show last night talking about 2013 with Marie D. Jones. If you have Streamlink, I suggest you go back in time and listen for that. Looks like I'll be skipping a big investment in the Blu-ray technology and waiting for the next one, though. The way the economy's going, worse before it gets better, I think my money is better spent elsewhere in a lot of reasons for a lot of things. Even as I write this, Reuters is reporting that Sunday has been, quote, one of the most dramatic days in Wall Street's history. Merrill Lynch agreed to sell itself to Bank of America for roughly $50 billion to avert a deepening financial crisis, while another prominent securities firm, Lehman Brothers, hurtled toward liquidation after it failed to find a buyer. People briefed on the deals said Wall Street observers are saying that even though the Monday morning commute to Manhattan hasn't even started yet, Monday morning on Wall Street is going to be a bumpy ride. Oh, well. Money can't buy you happiness. Just look at the latest happiness index. Canada and Mexico are among the top 15 happiest countries in the world, ahead of the U.S., despite being less wealthy than the United States. You see, that's why I say, the aliens come, you know? They ought to eat the Canadians first. Those people who are hovering silently outside of Earth's atmosphere, you know, in their secret cloaking devices, just waiting for their chance to invade Canada, are the free-range North Americans. For that matter, so are Mexicans. Just a little more picante. The ranking is compiled by the World Database of Happiness, which is maintained by one of the world's leading happiness researchers at Erasmus University in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Denmark, Switzerland, and Austria are the world's happiest countries, according to the database and Canada.com. Now, they don't mention that Denmark, Switzerland, and Austria still have beta. So no wonder they're still so happy. Reminds me of a book I just got, but I haven't had a chance to read yet, called Against Happiness. It's a clever little book that argues that happiness is overrated and that we would all feel better if we all felt like hell. Next time I'm in a bad mood, and that doesn't happen very often, I'll read a little bit and I'll get back to you. Finally, a story that only puts shippers in a good mood. I got this letter from our friend Cap'n Kelly, who writes, on September 6th, the National Ice and Snow Data Center confirmed that open water was circling the North Pole. Not enough to navigate completely through this year, but it has opened up for possibly the first time in 125,000 years. Also in the news, Germany's Beluga Shipping Group announced this week that it plans to send the first ship through the newly opened waters north of Russia next summer, cutting 4,000 miles off the voyage from Germany to Japan. The Arctic Passage, from myth to reality, smooth sailing, Kelly. Well, man-made or natural or a combination of both, the fact that there is a water passageway across the North Pole for the first time in 125,000 years has got to get our attention. Whether it's because of fossil fuels or not, I don't know. But I know that the more people talk about trying to find alternative fuels, the more solar thermal energy will come into this. And we'll talk about a generator to capture that coming up next hour. It's closer than you think, and we'll hear more about it from Sir Charles Schulz. What will we hear from you? Let's start east of the Rockies to get it started for open lines. Rest of this hour, Michael is in Gulfport, Mississippi. Michael, did you get a right hook from Hurricane Ike?
Hurricane Ike was as pleasant as a bunch of little brownies selling cookies outside of Kmart.
Okay, so not too bad then for you.
I hardly even got a sprinkle. We probably got some gust of wind up to about 47 miles an hour, and that was it.
Nice for a change.
Blessing. I pity the people in Texas, though.
Yeah.
As many hurricanes as I've been through down here in my life, I pity anybody that has to go through one.
Yep.
We got the lucky chip on this one.
Well, they just found
we don't get no more.
I get that. There's 13 dead now, they're reporting, in Texas, and they're still going door to door trying to find more. So it's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, the first thing I want to say, I got a question for you, if you know anything about it. But the first thing I want to do is I want to tell you how much I appreciate your program between you and George. I was channel surfing one night. I was on the night shift, and I was swapping over to day shift, and I was just listening to the radio shows, and I happened to run across the show, and I've been listening every night ever since.
Good. Well, you know, we're always glad to get new people, and I think for a show that's been on as long as we have been on, it's always nice to hear that new people are sampling it, so
well,
thank
it's,
you.
It's so varied. I mean, you know, you've got the freakish stuff, you've got the alien stuff, you've got the paranormal stuff. There was one like last week, I really got into it. The guy was talking about economics and about the $8 trillion that left the country at a certain period of time because the corporations were doing this and that and the other, and
right.
The effect it was going to have. I mean, all of that's so informative. You know, you don't hear it on 2020 or 60 Minutes or anything like that. And it just amazes me the topics y'all cover and how in depth you cover them. But I really appreciate the show. I really love it.
Well, thank you. We're glad to have you.
I got a question for you. A couple of weeks ago, I believe it was, George was talking to a fellow that was going on an expedition. I believe it was to Russia. It might have been Russia. But they were going to go into this cavern about this artifact that they had found. And it was some type of machine. And I believe his name was Ned.
Okay.
If my memory serves me correctly. But he was talking about getting up an expedition. Well, my 19-year-old son wants to go on that. he said he'll volunteer as long as they feed him and give him a place to sleep. He wants to go on it so bad, and he can't find out any information about where the thing is heading up or anything.
Well,
I was just wondering if you knew anything about it.
You know, I only know just the headline for it. So I tell you what, let me see what I can find out for you before the end of the hour, and I'll see if I can't get the latest and even maybe get you a link. So keep on listening, Michael, and thanks for listening so far. Let's go to Tom in Chico, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Tom?
Hey, Mr. Funnett, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I have a question to ask you.
All right.
All right. You die, you go to heaven.
Okay.
Who's the first person or famous person, whatever, you would like to meet up with?
Well,
and I got the reason I'm asking the question.
That's fine. If I die and go to heaven, and this is an experience along the sort of the traditional lines, of course, the first famous person I would like to see would only confirm that I was in heaven, and that would be Jesus. So that if I had to do that, that'd just be sort of a reassuring, okay, I'm in the right place kind of a thing.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked it,
yeah, go
I was
ahead.
Asked this question in 1974. I was just before I graduated from high school, and I was asked it. I was going to a high school, a Christian-based school, you know, near my hometown.
Sure.
And that was a question that I was asked. And
what did you say?
Most of the people in the class answered, of course, Jesus, a bunch of, like, Moses, you know, people from the Bible and stuff like that. I answered myself personally that I would like to meet with my father. I didn't get to know my birth father.
He would have been the second person.
I was 5 years old when he died.
But you asked me historic. So if you said, if you...
A celebrity...
If you'd thrown it open to just anybody, I would have said my dad too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, since that time, I've had my mother has passed, my stepfather, and I had a sister pass just last year. And I would just love to be able to get with all those family members and people that have passed before me. You know, I'm just like I have a big family reunion up there.
I totally get that. Have you ever read the book, The Seven People You Meet in Heaven?
No, I've heard of it. I've never read it, though.
It was written for you. It was written for this very question, and I encourage you to pursue it. I thought it was very well written. So take a look at that. The Seven People You'll Meet in Heaven is the same guy who did Tuesdays with Maury. Tony is in Maryland on Coast to Coast AM. Tony?
Hi, Mr. Ian. How you doing, sir?
All right. It's open lines. What's on your mind?
Well, this is a great honor for me here to finally get a hold of you. I've been wanting to talk to you about something might be kind of important.
All right.
Okay. This is now off the internet, so I can't speak for the veracity of it, but, you know, here goes. In the month of October, I think it's either the 6th or the 14th, there's supposed to be what they call a Federation of Light, 2,000-mile-long light craft. It will appear in the skies. This is supposed to be the Federation of Light. They're supposed to be, quote-unquote, the army of the Archangel Michael. Now, they're make the comment on their thing on the internet that they're Pleiaren and some other alien species, and they will make themselves available up in the sky for no less than 72 Earth hours. And they predict, you know, how, like, they're going to try to, like, make stuff up about them, you know, the governments and then the New World Order people. And, well, they're going to, basically just stay there. They're not going to come down here yet because they figure you're going to freak people out. Now, there's this, got some stuff up here about this ship, but the thing that really concerns me is if, you know, this is really like end times, as, you know, some people think, and, like, you know, the whole thing with 2012, I'm not a very good student of the Bible. Sorry about that, but, you know, I'm really not, but
you don't have to apologize to me.
In Revelation, they talk about the first ones that come along pretending to be, basically good and, warriors of God.
Right.
And they're supposed to be the good guys, but, you know, and they act like the good guys, but they're really not, and they turn out to be Satan's army. So I wonder if this could be it.
Well, I mean, you got a lot going on here in this, so you're sort of packing it all in there. First of all, do you accept that the Galactic Federation of Light will happen, that this first contact will happen on October 14th? Do you believe that's true?
I can't accept nothing. I mean, you know, I'm just a regular person. I mean, if it happens, it happens. I mean, short of my own heartbeat, I got no control over anything.
Well, I understand that. But I'm just saying, I would love to think that it might happen, but as you say, it's just something that's been going around the net. So, I mean, I would love to see some other way of even getting invested in that as being a likelihood, but you are right. I mean, I got a couple of emails about this too, this UFO appearance that's supposed to change the world October 14th. But that whole Archangel thing, I don't know. I separate that one out, because I've actually gotten an email in a couple of different forms, one that mentions the Archangel and the other doesn't. So we'll just, you know what? George will be on the air that night. And I'm sure that there'll be more than a few phone calls from people if they do see something. I'd be listening to Coast to Coast October 14th. I would just pencil that in right now. Maybe we'll follow that up, too, when we get to more open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Yeah, I'm just trying to find the latest, if I could, on that expedition. I don't know the story very well, but I've got somebody else looking at it, too, seeing whether we can't get an update for the caller, Michael, before the hour runs out. And we get talking about solar thermal generators closer than you think, and perhaps here to save the planet in a way that that many people have been advocating for years. So it's great, you know, solar power, fine, we got that. What's the difference? What are we really talking about here? Well, wait till you hear coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Also, Sir Charles Schulz, of course, is a very entertaining figure in his own right, and he's been on a couple of times with a couple of different topics, so who knows where the conversation will end up. Kind of like open lines, which we'll get back to right away next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, back to open lines, right where we left off. That leaves us with Constance in College Station, Texas, on Coast to Coast AM. Constance?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. This is concerning the Thunderbird.
Love those stories.
Actually, I have never seen one, but what it makes me think of, the last time there was something on, it was about a boy where one of these birds tried to lift him up in front of his family. Well,
it's in Illinois.
I don't know where it was, but the comment at the time was that maybe it was a type of condor. There is no way that it could be. They do not have strong feet. Their feet are very weak, and they're not lifting feet. And they also do not have a head that anybody could describe as having an eagle-like bill. But there is, in Europe, a bird called a bearded vulture. It stands 4 feet tall and has a 15-foot wingspread.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also called a lammergeier. And they are noted for living in high mountains. And also, I don't know if they take live animals, but they have a reputation for taking bones and dropping them from a height the way seagulls do,
mm-hmm.
to break them. And then they eat the marrow from them.
Right.
I don't know them ever being known in the United States or in the New World, but
let me jump in and tell you a little bit more about that, though. The History Channel did a recreation of the Thunderbird sightings, and one of the discussions was whether or not certain larger non-native species could be coming over from either Europe or Africa to the United States. And so that debate went on in at least in part in that History Channel piece. I think you'd really enjoy that, actually.
Well, I wouldn't enjoy it because I'm blind.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
It's just that I have not seen it and would never see it. But I do remember pictures. I've, of course, never seen a bearded vulture, but they also have a face that could even be perhaps mistaken for a human. They have a very upright stance.
Okay.
And they are found from the Pyrenees over to Africa. They're considered one of the African vultures.
Well, that is commensurate with that information that has actually been already bandied about on whether or not that was what had attacked that boy. I want to say it was in Lockport, Illinois, but I can't remember. But it's still an amazing story, and the kid is alive today as an adult and swears by it and passes a lie detector. And I don't know it whatever it was, it nearly got him. But he was just too big to get off the ground that much. Bert is in California on Coast to Coast AM. Bert?
Yes. Hi, Ian. I wanted to talk about one of President Bush's misdeeds.
Okay.
There was a she is now deceased, but a black woman by the name of Margie Schoendiger was raped by President Bush. And you can read the article. The website is always coming down, so the Coast to Coast listeners might want to print the article, but you can read the article at whistleblowerbert.com.
You're referring to the woman who filed a civil suit against Texas Governor Bush, but you right. say that it happened, and in fact, he's never been convicted of that. And let's just be clear, because when you say that assumes his guilt, when in fact he hasn't been tried for anything like that, correct?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's just very clear about that. So yeah, you're referring to the woman who filed a lawsuit against what was then the governor, right? Or for an incident that happened while he was governor, I believe. And she charged him with sex crimes. But I think that's just kind of, it got kind of thrown out, didn't it? I don't know whatever happened with that. But, fair enough. Then there's a little bit on the web on that. I've gotten a few emails over the years about it. And that's just where it stands, is a lawsuit, never a charge. Andy's in Columbia, South Carolina on Coast to Coast AM. Andy?
Yeah, what Constance said in Texas, the earth still has enough vast, untamed wild expanses. My mind's open to us finding some more heretofore unknown, unidentified species within the aviary realm. So
you know, not
only Bigfoot and Sasquatch and all, but could be up there flying around and making occasional landings in where they wouldn't be seen normally.
You'll be also. The difference between Bigfoot and Big Claw.
Yeah, same idea. I want to make a serious suggestion on hopefully preventing recurrence of the Metrolink and Union Pacific freight train collision in California on Friday.
Okay.
And then say something, I think, very pleasant about the astral projection and time travel both you and George have mentioned recently.
Okay.
You know, the text messaging is so sensory invasive and preoccupying. It's bad enough when a person in a car is doing it, but someone responsible, the whole trainload of lives, I think there ought to be a standard operating rule in Amtrak and in transit authorities that any incoming and outgoing message traffic would have to be through the Amtrak or the transit authority dispatcher or operator. And if a family had to get in touch with someone and if it's, you know, disturbing news, they would probably have the discretion to relay it during a station stop rather than while they're out, you know, on the run. Especially somebody with a heart profile, you know, some chronic disease. And it would just be using, like, voice on the least.
Okay. All right. No argument here. And then what would be your second, what was your second point?
Well, I think humor is a great perspective before in any serious discussion. The Clariosophic Literary Society at the University of South Carolina let me and one other guy in the back door, I'm dyslexic, and they knew I'd never had the grade point average to qualify, but I knew I could talk interesting. I remember say BS, and they wanted me in, and we were talking about astral projection. I said, first on ESP, I think maybe the low, like micro wattage or joule level of transmission might be compensated for by the extreme sensitivity of a similar level on the receiver or receiver brain.
Okay.
In other words, at the same level.
Right.
And the way humor comes in, one of our members, Joe Fracavera from the Big Apple area, I said, you know, if we're going to do a lot of this time travel and astral projection, we've got to think in terms of ongoing cost. So you're talking about first class or tourist or what? And Joe says, always specify strictly tourist.
Well, that's funny. And I think in a lot of ways, too, I have a friend who does text messaging, and it's perfect for him because he is dyslexic. And he never has to worry about whether he spells words properly. Thank you, Andy. Jacob is in Rockville, Maryland on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Jacob?
Hey, Ian. I've been listening to the Coast to Coast show for a while.
Okay.
Sometimes I've noticed I don't understand what the guests are talking about. Like when you have, you know how you have guests on the show talk about 2012?
Okay.
Like, I just don't understand that much. I'm wondering if you could recommend any books that I could read about that, like to help me better understand this Age of Enlightenment thing. It's like I'm just listening. I understand it a little bit, but not really.
Well, I would recommend her book, Marie D. Jones, from last night, which gives a complete summary of all of the different points of view about 2012 before the second half of the book addresses what 2013 would be like. So that would be a great book for you to start with, and I think after that you'll be an expert.
Also, I have another question.
Sure.
I've been reading like a book called The World Religion, and now I'm reading a book on mysticism. Based on what I'm reading, what subject of the paranormal do you think I should look up next?
If you're starting with mysticism.
Yeah.
I mean, you're if you go through the door of mysticism, I think it, first of all, it really questions what is normal and what is paranormal. So for me, a lot of what some people call paranormal, I just think of as normal. So part of that is from a mystical point of view, it changes your perspective on whether something is extraordinary or just ordinary, and we don't run into it very often. So I would, if I were you, I would perhaps start with a conversation on ghosts out of mysticism, or reincarnation out of mysticism, both of which come up a bit. And I find whether it's the Kabbalistic mysticism, whether you're getting into certain types of ancient Jewish beliefs or ancient Christian or Jewish Christian beliefs, I think that it's very compelling to read about soul work and the surviving soul and how people continue to maintain an intelligence, both a human mind and then also melding into a divine mind after death. That'd be my recommendation to you, Jacob. Let's go to Kelly in Ohio, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Kelly?
Hey.
Hey.
Well, we had lots of sun today, and as Hurricane Ike was going through, it acted like a vent for it to unleash its fury as it broke down. And we had, like, up to 75-mile-an-hour winds on a sunny day. It was really weird.
Well, I started to hear a little bit about that because of the they said that it's going to end, Ike is going to end in Buffalo, right?
I have no clue.
Yeah, Ike was going to play it
out here for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Is that that's how the trajectory was going to go fast across the upper Midwest or the Mississippi Valley states, and then head into toward Buffalo. So you're without power right now?
Yeah, I mean, there was no rain, no thunder, nothing. It was just a sunny day, bunch of wind. It blew debris everywhere. Trees are knocked down. There's trees in the roads, power lines everywhere. There's 100,000 people without power everywhere between Indiana, Ohio, and northern Kentucky.
Yeah, how about that? Well, they got plenty of companies still down in Texas and in the Gulf State. So thank you, Kelly. Sorry it's happened to you. Chance is in the Bay Area, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Chance?
Hiya, Ian. Nice to talk to you.
And you.
And I just wanted to backtrack to one of your previous caller's questions about if you died and went to the next level, who's the first person you would see?
Who would that be for you?
Well, I'm just wondering if for you and your listeners, and I've been thinking about this, what if the first person you saw was a mirror? And you have to deal with that for eternity. Is that person in the mirror somebody that you could deal with for eternity? And some food for thought and something to think about as we develop our persona in this life so that we may be capable in the next life of being able to stand ourselves.
That's an interesting thought. That's very mystical, you know. I mean, that's it's not just good mysticism. That's right out of Star Wars too, right?
In the somewhere out there in the cosmos.
No, I mean it's in when Luke has to face himself in the cave. I think is the idea of looking at himself behind the mask. You know, I think that's good. So that's who you think is that who you would want to run into is yourself?
That's what I'm developing. I mean, it's worth thinking about anyway. So
all right.
For thought, I appreciate any feedback on that one.
Well, I think that we do have to get right with ourselves. And I'll tell you this old proverb, and I found it fascinating when someone told it to me. So I may have mentioned it on the air before on Coast to Coast, but I think it's a paradigm worth considering, much like that. And that is that heaven is filled with people who are forgiven, and hell is filled with people who can't forgive themselves. And it's not being able to forgive yourself that keeps you in a kind of perpetual hell. Think on that. Walt is in Rialto, California, on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Walt?
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Good. I just had a question regarding John Peter. This is probably a couple of weeks ago you were talking about him. And it was made mention during that broadcast that John Peter had, let's say he left some point in the future, a Tuesday, all right? He left a day in the future. And it was mentioned that once leaving that day, he could never return to that same day. And the question that I had is, would that not sentence him to, after his return back to time, would that not sentence him to the rest of his life having two of them in his particular world?
Okay. I mean, I guess you're right. It could. Yep.
If we're gonna
go by the Back to the Future paradigm, which, you know, I mean, as explicated by in the movie Back to the Future, that if you would go back and there would be two of you and you could possibly bump into each other and
right.
But that also assumes, though, I mean, that is what would happen. What if whenever you left this world, you left the world? There was no form of you to ever run into, that there's only one form of you, whether it's the future, the past, or the present. And that if you went into the past, there would just be your past you, but you would have your past you's consciousness.
Okay. And then going back into the future, since you had left, there's not one of you there now until you get back. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah,
okay.
You're gone.
That makes some sense. But that was really a weird, it was just something I had to think about and get answered.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't, if that makes sense, I'm glad. It is the classic kind of screenwriter's problem with time travel movies, and it's never been fully fleshed out. I don't know that anybody ever could until somebody finally is able to do it, perhaps like he did. Dan is in Fort Lauderdale on Coast to Coast AM. Dan?
Hello, Ian. Speaking of getting right with oneself, I don't know if you guys have caught a lot of grief for having Philip Berg on your show.
Nope.
But, you know,
why should we?
I wonder, as far as getting right with oneself, Obama's alluded to it, but his trip to 1981, the summer of 81, to Pakistan, and his mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, in Hawaii, there's some real questions around that, and I would hope that maybe Coast to Coast, I don't know if they would, but someone would bring this up, because there's some real things, shocking things in his past that might make one wonder about why all this.
You know what? I'd love
Pakistanis.
Here's what I love. Whether it's the shocking thing said about McCain, or whether it's the shocking thing said about Palin, which are in this week's National Enquirer, or whether it's the shocking things about Barack Obama, I think what we could do only is throw out the question. And then hope for good answers, as opposed to assuming that just a good question is sufficient. So, Dan, you know, like anybody else out there, if we can find out more than just what's being said on the internet, it'll help our country. Whether it's the accusations against McCain or Palin or Obama. I haven't heard anything against Biden lately, but just maybe a slow news week. Well, we're putting up a link on the webpage for more information about that expedition that we spoke about earlier in the hour. So go check out coasttocoastam.com. And solar, thermal, energy, generators next. This is Ian Punnett.